Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you this week from snowy and very cold Crested Butte, Colorado. I am your host, Mark Troutman. This educational, personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. For this show, I wanted to talk about how I start out the year from a personal financial planning perspective. For me, it's a time for reflection on the past year's financial activity and an opportunity to outline the current year's financial plan. And I like to do it on a one-page format, and then I can just check off things as they happen throughout the year. So let's talk a little bit about how I accomplish this and how you might be able to do the same. The first thing I like to do is review income and expenses for the past year. I track everything in Quicken, so it's fairly easy to create a report and see where all of the money came from. For me, it's more money going out than coming in. So looking at the expenses, and then I can drill down into each category and subcategory to see the individual items. So it's a kind of a tedious process to track everything throughout the year, but at the end of the year or the beginning of the year, looking back at the prior year, it makes for very easy analysis on the numbers. Now, if you don't do that, there is an alternative approach, and that would be to download all of your banking information, investment information, spending, if it's like credit cards, for example, certainly like loan statements or anything like that. And many of the banking companies online will allow you to see your spending. Same with the credit card companies. They'll let you do that. They'll let you look at it in a graphical format, download it, cut and paste it into a spreadsheet. So however you choose to do it, you need to gather all of that information somehow. And also find it's a good time of the year to download at least your year-end statements. I like to keep them in a folder on my computer so I have a personal copy of it and not just rely on the bank or investment company to maintain that for me. I like to keep a quasi-hard copy on my computer. Some people might still print them out. I don't know, but that's an option as well. The annual activity isn't necessarily going to be picked up in that year-end statement unless it's a full year-to-date year-end statement. You may need to download quarterly statements or monthly statements to capture all that activity. But however you choose, I think it's great to review your expenses especially and look at it from the standpoint of, was your spending aligned with your values? That's really what I'm asking myself every year when I look at my expenses. I am trying to determine if I spent money in the places that are meaningful to me and avoided spending money in the places that aren't as meaningful. And then I look for opportunities to make improvements in the current year or future years. I also look to it as a budget or at least a starting line for a quasi-budget or expectation of spending for this current year, for example. As far as income goes, I'm retired. I don't have really any income other than investment income. I don't really view that as spendable income. I just kind of view it as the portfolio gaining value. So my income in my mind is more of the withdrawals that I take from my investment accounts as opposed to the income that the investment accounts earn. However, I do create a spreadsheet, or I have a spreadsheet that I track my kind of financial independence portfolio, and I do pay attention to what the gains or potentially losses are in the year, including income and dividends and realized and unrealized capital gains, to get an understanding of how those investment accounts are performing over time, primarily, not necessarily year to year, but of course it is interesting to see how it did in the past year. I did review how to track and report and categorize income and expenses in episode number 4. So I will put that in the show notes so you can go back and listen to that one for some more details on how to do the income and expense tracking. And then the other thing I like to do is calculate net worth for the year as of December 31st. I also covered the net worth statement in episode 3, so you can go back and hear how to do that exactly. But basically what we're doing is listing all of the assets on the left-hand side of the page or spreadsheet, if you will, column, and then liabilities on the right-hand side or debts. I like to organize them into 3 categories: cash and cash equivalents, and this is for assets, cash and cash equivalents, investments, and then use assets. Those would be things like a house, cars, what have you. And then on the liability side, I like to break it down by short-term and long-term. Short-term being, for me, at least, credit cards, which I pay off in full every month. But again, there may be a balance as of 12/31, so it will be included in the net worth statement. And then any other debts that I may have. I currently don't have any because I sold my house and my mortgage is paid off. And I did not take a mortgage out of my new house, so I don't really have very many on the liability side. But if you had student loans, for example, auto loans, those would all be included there. And then calculate net worth. I actually like to calculate my net worth quarterly. I keep a spreadsheet for each year and then a tab for each quarter. That's how I do it. Some people may have just one spreadsheet with a tab for every year or every quarter, for example, and just keep that going into perpetuity. I like to look back and see how my net worth has tracked over time. And then the other thing I like to do is look at the net worth statement from kind of an analytical point of view and look at it from the standpoint of, maybe is there an opportunity to improve where assets are located, for example, not physically located, but should there be, let's say, less cash and more investments? Or should, you know, if there are accounts such as tax-deferred accounts that are traditional and Roth, is there an opportunity for Roth conversions down the road? Is there a loan that could be paid off, for example, or things of that nature? So I'm always looking for pieces of information from the net worth statement and looking for improvement. I think I've got it dialed in by now, but if I were just starting out, that's what I would be focusing on, is looking at that net worth statement and seeing if there could be any improvement, especially if there are debts, for example, organizing which ones should be prioritized, most likely based on interest rate, paying off those higher interest rates first. So that's what I do from the kind of review of the past year. I look at my income and expenses, I look at my net worth, and then I look for nuggets of information that I think are of interest. Like I said, making sure my expenses track with my values and if there's any opportunity for improvement in the location of different items on the net worth statement. The next thing I start doing at this time of the year is starting to prepare for the 2024 tax filing season. So we will be filing taxes by April 15th for the prior year, 2024. So this is when I start thinking about things like, are there any tax saving opportunities that are still available before this year's tax filing deadline? For example, if you were able to make IRA contributions and you didn't max out, but you may have some extra funds to be able to do that, this would be a good time to do it. Prior to filing your tax return, you can still make contributions to your IRA for the prior year. You do need to note it. When you make those contributions at your investment firm, they will usually ask, is this a 2024 contribution or a 2025 contribution? If you have yet to maximize your contributions for the prior year, it usually is advantageous to fill that up first before moving on to making contributions for the current year. That also applies to HSA, held savings accounts. You can do the same thing. You can make contributions for the prior year up to when you file your tax return, or April 15th. So you could do that as well. So that's another opportunity. I am not able to make IRA contributions because I didn't have earned income. So that doesn't apply to me, but I did maximize my HSA contribution. And in fact, when we get to the one-page financial plan, I maximize my HSA contributions at the beginning of every year. So that's what my goal is, and we'll get to that in the one-page financial plan. The other thing you can start doing is I actually got my first email notification that a tax form was available from my bank for my mortgage that I had. So I went online and I downloaded that form. A lot of times you may just get an email saying a tax form is available. And if you don't pay attention to those, you may forget that that tax form is available. No longer are institutions automatically mailing these forms to you. Most people now opt for electronic delivery, and they don't necessarily automatically deliver the tax form. They will just notify you by an email saying a tax form is available. So it's up to you to make sure you get all those tax forms downloaded. I like to put them in a separate folder, and I label it 2024 taxes, and I put all of my tax forms in there. And if I get physical forms, you could use a folder, but I like to scan them and put them all in that same electronic folder on my computer. And then I know that all the forms are in that folder. They're not divided between an electronic version and some in print. So if you have the ability to scan, most people could use their phone and send an email to themselves and do it that way. But most people have the ability to somehow translate that physical piece of paper into an electronic format and put it in that folder. So whenever you're getting these emails saying a tax form is available, make sure you go and get those tax forms and keep them in an organized fashion. So when it comes to tax time, you won't miss anything and you'll be ready to file your taxes when you're able to. The other thing that is coming up here is the fourth quarter estimated tax payment is due on January 15th of 2025. So that's the fourth quarter estimated tax payment for 2024 is due by January 15th. So you need to make that payment if you're paying estimated taxes throughout the year instead of withholding or in addition to withholding. And then the other thing I like to do is start to estimate my tax liability. I've talked about using a program from dinkytown.net. I'll put that link in the show notes. It's a great free online software that you can put in all of your tax information and it will give you a very accurate estimate of your potential federal tax liability. As my tax forms come in, I start populating that. I have been doing it with estimates throughout the year, but now that these forms are coming in, I can use now the actual numbers from the forms instead of what I was estimating it to be previously. So that's what I start doing at this time of the year for tax filing season. Then I like to look forward to what is my plan for 2025. So this is not a full-blown lifetime financial plan, but just a kind of one-page document that I can use and refer to make sure that I am doing everything that I intend to do for the year. And we'll talk about what is on that piece of paper for me, at least. So the first item that I list, or the first category that I have on this paper, is what my estimated income is and what those sources are. If I was employed, for example, I would probably put in there what I anticipated my income to be from, whether it's W-2 income or self-employment income. Now, I'm retired, and for retirees, you would probably want to list your Social Security benefits you expect to receive this year if you are claiming currently or a recipient. If you are a pensioner, what those pensions would be. If you have any required minimum distributions, whether they be from an inherited IRA or your own IRA, you would want to write those down. And any other IRA distributions you may take that might be ones that are not required, but you are living off of your retirement accounts, for example, and you take distributions on a regular basis. What are those distributions expected to be? The other thing you may want to do is identify any Roth IRA conversions you expect to make in the year, although you may want to hold off on actually doing the conversions until later in the year when you know what your income is more likely to be. Since I don't have Social Security, a pension, or required minimum distribution, and I'm not making regular distributions from my IRA, my primary income, or at least income for tax reporting purposes are Roth IRA conversions. What I do is I decide what my income will be, and we'll get into a little bit on how I think about that because I am on the Affordable Care Act health insurance program, and there is an opportunity for some subsidy. So I do look at what my conversions are or anticipate to be to manage that if need be. And I'll talk about how I think about that. But what I like to do is do some of the conversion if that's my only income I expect for the year at the beginning of the year to take advantage of that money potentially compounding tax-free during the year instead of waiting to the end of the year. But I do hold off and not do all of it. And I have a catch-up amount that I do at the end of the year when I have a more clarity on what my total income is going to be. The other thing I would probably note on here is if you are potentially going to be claiming Social Security for the first time this year. Maybe you've reached the age where you're going to claim. Maybe it's 70, maybe it's an earlier age. I would also download your Social Security statement. I just did that because the current statement, for me at least, now shows the COLA adjustment, cost of living adjustment for the prior year that's now effective, so I can see what my new estimated benefit will be at various ages. I am also a widower, and I will be collecting, I turn 60 this year, I will be collecting a survivor benefit on my wife's record when I turn 60 later this year. So I've penned that in as income that will start much later in the year. For me, it's only a few months, but it will start. So I need to factor that in. And then the last thing you may want to do, and what I do, is since I create my own paycheck, that's how I have income to live on throughout the year. I also write down what am I going to, quote, pay myself each month. And I like to get a monthly check at the beginning of each month, not a check, but a deposit into my regular checking account for use every month. And then I also identify the source of those funds. For me, it's a taxable brokerage account. But if I didn't have that and I had to start withdrawing from a retirement account, I would want to note that as well and also factor that in from a potential tax standpoint. The other thing I always put on here, it sounds silly, but I put my tax filing status down. It's another area. And I like to review what the tax brackets are based on the current year's adjusted numbers for inflation. I will link to the College for Financial Planning 2025 Annual Limits Relating to Financial Planning document that shows all of this information, tax brackets, all the different amounts that you can contribute to retirement accounts, for example, HSAs and all the like. So that's my little helper sheet that I keep by my side so that I can fill in some of this information. But I like to at least know what my tax bracket target is. I like to always make use of the 10 and 12% bracket as much as possible, whether that's from Roth conversions or if there were long-term capital gains, for example, that could be taxed at 0% within those tax brackets effectively. I like to maximize that. Oh, the one other thing I would mention about your tax filing status, is it going to change for you this year? Maybe you're single and you anticipate getting married. So that would be certainly something to note and understand how your tax brackets will work with your partner. And then also, if you're getting married, for example, reporting your taxes, married, filing jointly, you will want to do this exercise together because everything is going to be combined from a tax perspective going forward if that's your case. So if you have a status where you're changing from single to married, for instance, definitely consider doing this with your partner and having all this information together because it will be very important to understand all of the income and how it affects tax status and so forth. There's a possibility that you may get divorced during the year. And how will that affect you? Will you become head of household? Maybe you have a dependent child that will make you eligible to be head of household, or maybe you'll be going from married, filing, joint to single. And how does that affect your tax situation? So definitely sounds silly to put your tax status down if it's going to remain the same, but I still put it in there. I don't anticipate it changing for me, but if it is going to change, that would definitely be a reason to really focus on what is your current year situation going to look like relative to what maybe you are used to in the past. Then we get to health insurance. Now, many people get it through their employer, so it's really not a material event when it comes to your financial planning. Yes, maybe you need to pay a portion of the premium, but it's not a significant factor in your financial plan. Whereas if you're getting health insurance on the marketplace, and by the way, open enrollment ends on January 15th, so you do have up until January 15th to enroll for 2025, unless you have a special event like you, I think it's divorce, change of employment, or loss of employment, things like that. But for the open enrollment period, it ends on January 15th for the 2025 year, or for any year really, for the calendar year. And what I like to do is estimate my subsidy, and you can go to healthcare.gov. I'll put the link in the show notes to look and see what your subsidy would be. For me, I'm in Colorado. We have our own Connect for Colorado plan or website where you can do this. But what I like to do is, and this is how I think about subsidies. So I actually got an email from Laura in Ohio who asked, could you discuss how the tax brackets work when income planning for ACA subsidies or Roth conversion planning? I know there are tables available, but is the amount in the table over and above the standard deduction, or is it included? How do you plan on what level to keep your income? So that's what I want to address here. First of all, the income in the tables that talks about the poverty levels and so forth, that does not factor in the standard deduction. That's total income. A standard deduction is just used for your tax filing purposes, but it's not used when looking at the ACA health insurance. When they're asking about income, it's total income, not net of the standard deduction. So that's the first question. And then the second thing is, this is how I think about it. I think personally that the 10 and 12% brackets are advantageous enough to make sure you maximize them fully every year. Because the next tax bracket after the 12 is 22, and those are currently scheduled to go up, the 10 and 12, well, all tax brackets in 2026. We'll see if that holds true. But for now, there's a pretty big gap between the 12 and the 22. So I like to utilize the 10 and 12% brackets to the fullest. So usually what I will do is I will look at the top of the 12% bracket, for instance, and then say, if this is my income, and then I go to the healthcare.gov, or in my case, Connect for Health Colorado, I think it is, and put in that income amount and see what kind of subsidy I get. And then if I have the ability to target my income, which anyone who's retired or living off of investment income, for instance, does have the ability to manage their income to some degree, primarily through Roth conversions, as you mentioned, or not doing Roth conversions, you can kind of guide yourself to whatever income level you want. So you could play with the calculations and see, well, what if my income was this or higher? What if it was this or lower? And you can see what the subsidy would be. There are a lot of factors that go into it. So your age, your family size, things of that nature, obviously where you live. So the subsidies can be vastly different for different people. So there's no tried and true rule on what the subsidy will be in dollars. But the way you can look at it is, usually if you're going to be at the top of the 12% bracket, whether you're single or married filing jointly, you're going to be in the upper echelons of the federal poverty level table, which is that 150%, 200%, 300%, 400% of federal poverty level, again, depending on family size. Unless you have a very large family, you're likely going to be in the 300 or 400% of the federal poverty level table, which means that you will have to pay up to 8.5% of your income towards the healthcare. So I kind of look at it as this: worst case scenario, all dollars in the 12%, for example, plus the 8.5% of subsidy loss as a result of having that income, effectively is like having a 20.5% tax bracket. 20.5%, I'm okay with paying that. Now, if you move to 22%, let's say you move $1,000 over that 12% line, and now $1,000 is in that 22%. Now it's 22% plus 8.5% or 30.5% on those additional dollars that move from that 12% bracket to the 22% bracket. That starts to become more expensive. And ultimately, once you continue to move through the 22 into the 24 and so forth, the subsidy is going to be eliminated as a result of the way the calculation works, and you don't just get a subsidy forever. Eventually, it runs out, right, based on your income. So for a period of time in the 22, and most likely not into the 24, but in the 22, some of those early dollars in the 22 will be subject to that 8.5% elimination of the subsidy. And so those dollars would be that 30.5%. And then eventually you get to a point where you're not getting a subsidy anymore. So any additional dollars are now effectively taxed just at the back down at the 22. So it's kind of like this bump up area in the 22 bracket. I know that sounds difficult, but basically the way I look at it is, for me, I'm okay in the 10 and 12. I just try to target it up to the 12. I try not to go too much higher into the 12. If I do, I might as well go way all the way up to the 24 and just totally lose my subsidy. And I've done that in a couple of years. And last year, in fact, that occurred because I sold my house and I did have some capital gains, so I did not get a subsidy. In fact, I've never gotten a subsidy because every year I've either done conversions or, in last year's case, sold a house. So I've never actually received the subsidy. But if I were to target it, and I am trying to target this year to stay in the 12% bracket, and I will get a small subsidy, but it's not substantial. And my health insurance is relatively expensive because I am older. So at my income level, there is some subsidy to be had because the insurance premium is higher, even for a single person. But in my daughter's case, for instance, she is on the ACA and her premium is so low that her income would have to be fairly low to really just get any subsidy because the premium isn't that high to begin with. So it really depends. And the best thing to do is just go on healthcare.gov or your state's website, if your state has its own program, and see what the subsidies are. And you can just say, what if my income is this? What if my income is this? What if my income is that? And you can get a feel of how that's going to play out. But if I had to boil it down to a very basic level, I would say for most people, it seems like it makes sense to go to the top of the 12% and try to stop there if you have the ability to manage income. It seems logical. So it's a long-winded answer. It's a relatively difficult calculation. So it's a little crazy, but that's kind of the best way I can boil it down for you. Thanks for sending in that question. I appreciate that. And hopefully it answered it. If not, send me an email and maybe we can chat offline a little bit more about it. All right. So that was insurance. One of the big items, or at least big items that has a lot of moving levers. And then the next section is really what I like to call the pay yourself first category, especially if you have earned income. And I like to identify and quantify the savings goals for the current year. So if you're employed, you may have a 401k plan, a 403b plan, maybe even a 457 plan. And I also like to note, what are the current limits for these? And also look back and see, did I maximize this last year? If not, is there an ability for me to increase my contribution percentage? If so, how am I going to do that? If I have an employer, maybe I want to make sure that my first paychecks are at a new contribution percentage, for example, so I can meet that maximum if that is achievable. So this year's maximum for those employer plan contributions is $23,500. And if you're 50 or older, there's a catch-up provision for an additional $7,500 for a total of $31,000. It's a lot for people to save, but if you can do it, that's awesome. And maybe you were close last year, or maybe you maxed out last year, and maybe you need to change your percentage contribution to make sure you max out again this year. And think about, how do you want to do it? Some companies allow you to give a dollar amount or a percentage amount. So you want to look at that and see, where are you going to end up this year? And is it where you want to be? Is that your target? If you have a simple plan, S-I-M-P-L-E plan, that maximum is $16,500 for 2025, plus a $3,500 age 50 and over catch-up for a total of $20,000. IRAs, you can contribute up to $7,000, or if you're age 50 or older, an additional $1,000 for $8,000. IRAs, you can do on top of your 401k plan. So maybe you don't like your 401k plan. It's not the greatest plan in the world. So you do enough to get the employer match, but then you move over to the IRA. And then the next question to ask yourself is, do you want to do the traditional or the Roth? I would suggest you look over at the income limits that are there for the ability to deduct for your traditional, and the income limits that will enable you to contribute to a Roth. And at a certain point, you can no longer contribute. Only the backdoor Roth is available. I won't get into the backdoor because it could be a whole nother hour or more. So we won't get into that. But you do need to decide, are you going to do the traditional or the Roth? I'm a big fan of the Roth. I like that. You don't get the tax deduction on the way in, but all of the growth and the distributions after age 59 and a half are fully tax-free. So I prefer the Roth, and especially since the traditional, I think at certain incomes, it could make sense. But for many people, the Roth usually makes more sense. But again, you need to do your own homework on that one. And then the other thing you can contribute to is the health savings account. If you have an HSA eligible plan, whether it's through your employer or through the marketplace, that's what I have. I do have an HSA plan. As a single, you can contribute up to $4,300 to your HSA. If you're age 55 or older, not age 50 like the retirement plans, but age 55 and older, you can do an additional $1,000. So 55 and over, you could do $5,300 as single. The family maximum, if you have a family plan, is $8,550. And each individual that's age 55 and over, so let's say you and your partner are both age 55 and over, you can each contribute an additional $1,000, but it can't be in that one account. It needs to be in your individual accounts. So that could potentially be up to $10,550 combined between the two of you. And then the other question is, do you have plans to contribute to something like a 529? Put that in there. And in all these cases, IRAs, HSAs, 401ks, 529s, how are you going to achieve this? Are you going to do it through a monthly withdrawal from your checking account, for example? Is it going to be through an employer paycheck where you can have it automatically deducted? Is it going to be front-loaded, which is what I did for my HSA, for example? I do that every year in January. You could potentially do that for your IRAs as well. You could front-load it. You could just say every January, I'm going to max out, assuming you have enough earned income to justify the contribution, because you do have to have at least that contribution amount in earned income for the year to make that contribution. So as long as you anticipate making, let's say, at least $7,000 if you're under age 50, or $8,000 if you're 50 or over, you could go ahead and make the contribution to your IRA in January, for example. You don't have to do it over the course of the year. Or maybe that's a tough thing to do, swallow from a cash flow perspective. So you do it monthly, for example, or whenever your paycheck comes. But figure out how you're going to do it. I'm a big fan of setting up automatic contributions. So have it automatically deducted from your checking account or your paycheck, so you don't have to think about it, whether it's monthly, bi-monthly, or what have you. It's just done automatically, and you're going to hit your maximum if that's your goal. And the other thing I like to put in this little section of the one-page financial plan is any other savings goals. So maybe you're in process of funding your emergency fund, or you have a vacation fund that you like to contribute to. I like vacation funds. I like to contribute to those and then go on vacation and have fun and not think about how I'm going to pay for this. If you have a fun bucket, we talked about the fun bucket before. Maybe you're contributing to your fun bucket, or maybe you're withdrawing from your fun bucket. But those goals can be identified as well, or any other big items. Maybe you have a, I don't know, car fund, a new car fund that you contribute to, and just make sure that whatever your goal is, that you've identified where the source of those funds is going to come from to fund those goals and the frequency. And again, automate it as much as you can. And then the last thing that you may want to look at here, or second to last maybe, is review your tax withholding situation or estimated tax payment plan for 2025. So for some of us retirees that don't have withholding from a paycheck, some of us have to pay estimated taxes. So trying to figure out what is that income going to be, what's that financial tax liability going to be, and how is that going to be funded? Is it going to be done through estimated payments quarterly throughout the year? Again, like I said, the fourth quarter estimated payment for last year's coming up January 15th, don't forget. And the first one for 2025 would be April 15th. So when you do your taxes, you'll probably have a pretty good understanding of what your estimated taxes might be for the current year. And you can set up those payments and you can set them up and have them automatically drafted both at the federal level and at most state levels as well. So I would just go ahead and set those up and be done with it and probably plan to do it somewhere around tax filing time because the first one, like I said, will be due on April 15th. And then if you have withholding from a paycheck, review your W-4, make sure that your withholding is correct, that it's enough. And or if it's too much, it's enough to make sure that your full tax liability is covered, but there's no reason to have it overcovered and get a big refund every year. For example, there's no reason to lend Uncle Sam money for the year with no interest, for example. So you may want to review your W-4, especially if you've had some changes. Maybe it's an additional side hustle job. Maybe it's a change in marital status. But definitely think about reviewing your W-4. I will also link to the IRS's W-4 section so you can calculate that online if you'd like. And then the last thing I like to do on the one-page financial plan is just list any major financial items that I think will be coming up in the year. Maybe you have a large vacation that you're going to go on that may require some significant funds, for example. Maybe you have major home improvements or maintenance that is coming up. Or maybe your child is going off to college for the first time and you have some big tuition bills and room and board that are coming up. Or potentially your car is on its last legs and you need to replace it this year. Or any other big item. And then I like to identify, well, where is that money going to come from? How is this going to work into the plan for the year so that it's not a onerous task when that situation comes up during the year. You will have already figured out, I know what the plan is, I know where it's going to come from, and this is how we're going to do it. So that's pretty much it for my one-page financial plan. Depending on all of your items, you might have to use small font. For me, it fits in regular 12 or 14-point font on one page, and it's a nice little piece of paper to have, and I check things off as they occur throughout the year. And I try to automate, like I said, as much as possible, and then just kind of manage and watch it throughout the year and just see that I'm on target. So I like to have this one-page financial plan. And as I said previously, get ready for tax filing season and having reviewed my income and expenses for the prior year and have calculated my net worth for year end. So I hope this was helpful. This is how I do things at the beginning of the year. I actually look forward to doing this. Maybe that's the geek in me, but I kind of had fun doing this. And that may sound odd, but for people like me, it is fun. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I will talk to you soon. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. If you would like me to answer a question on the show, please send it to mark@marksmoneymind.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Let me know your first name, or let me know if you would like to remain anonymous, and also your state of residence if you choose. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next time on the Mark's Money Mind show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. And now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.